Chapter 3. During Ael's absence, the community offered up Mass and special prayers each day for the success of his mission. When a month went by without news, Prior Cuncut began to look worried and anxiety grew. There was talk of sending a further, perhaps a rescue, mission. But before that step could be taken, A and his companions arrived back, and they were not alone. Along with them, a dozen warrior monks from Armagh entered the enclosure. The excited congregation gathered round, calling, "Foilte, welcome back, Father Abbot, Deo gracias," and "Thank God and the saints for your safe return." A called for silence and spread his arms. "Friends and brothers, I'm truly glad to be back among you. I'll be reporting to the chapter later, but I can tell you now that all our hopes have been fulfilled. We're under St. Patrick's patronage now, and that of his successors at Armagh. The tribute payments are agreed at light levels. Our liturgy will be respected, and these sturdy new fellow travellers of mine will stay with us for our defence. They'll train some of you in the arts of defensive warfare. You won't even have to change your hairstyles." A storm of cheering broke out. Abbot A, looking tired but exhilarated, retired to rest. The new defenders were welcomed, fed, and shown to the guest house, where they would lodge until houses could be built for them outside the enclosure. At the chapter house next day, A spelt out the details. They were surprisingly favourable to Sleety. "It wasn't easy," the abbot said. "There are a few people there who don't like the arrangement. They argued that we were too far away and too hard to defend, and that the tribute was too low. But Abbot Shagin is a good friend to us, and he pushed it through in the end." Later, Donica spoke to Murchu privately. "Father Scriptor had almost failed," he said. "But our abbot was most eloquent, especially in his praise of Patrick. It was he as much as Shagin who made our visit a success." Gradually, life at the monastery resumed its normal routine, but there were some differences. The warrior monks from Armagh had settled in, and the community had got used to hearing their unfamiliar northern accents. 25 of the estate workers had most of their normal tasks taken over by monks to free them for defence training. The next St. Brigid's Day, Aes sent the usual annual gift to Kildare, where it was received grudgingly, but not returned. It seemed that the Igúnlinga had decided they could not contest Sleety's new status. Prayers to Brigid were kept in the liturgy, but the hymn to Patrick, O Dite Omnes, was added on. It was belted out at maximum volume by the enthusiastic choir. On the 17th of March, the Feast of Patrick was, A decided, to be celebrated in style. First would come hymns by a minor choir of 10 little boys from the school to precede sung high mass. Brother Choirmaster had selected the boys and had established harmony among them. No easy task, because those from Leinster thought that the Meath boys put on arrogant royal airs, while the Meath scholars regarded their comrades from Leinster and Coola as uncouth blow-ins and fish scavengers respectively. The minor choir, in spotless white surplices, had been led out into the enclosure by the choirmaster, who lined them up ready for inspection by the abbot, then stepped aside briefly to exchange some news with Brother Fiochra. Father Murchu happened to be crossing the enclosure. He was surprised to see a sudden squabble breaking out in the minor choir, fists flying, three boys rolling on the ground. He stopped and gazed at the spectacle. "Brother Choirmaster," he called, "Ecce Chorus Angelorum." The appalled choirmaster raced back to his charges. "What in God's name is going on here?" came a roar from behind Murchu. Abbot A had arrived. The choir members stood quietly once more, but some were snivelling, some had bloody noses or black eyes, and some had mud-streaked surplices. "Brother choirmaster," shouted A, "take these children away and get them cleaned up. They're not singing today. I'll think up a penance for you later." After this unfortunate start, the celebration had to improve, and it did. The adult choir performed magnificently. The high mass was smoothly celebrated and deeply reverent, while the large congregation, including distinguished visitors, all agreed that St. Patrick would have been proud of the occasion. For the feast to be held later, wine had been brought across the mountains from the port at Invernia. "And sadly shaken up it is," said Brother Cook, hunting frantically for his little used wine strainer, "but still drinkable, I hope, to accompany an enormous roasted whole pig, warm wheaten bread, and leek and celery soup. Musicians, poets, and even a juggler had been brought in to entertain the company. When the festive meal was ready, dignitaries from Armagh were escorted to the top table in the refectory. They had been invited to witness this great celebration of their patron saint and were seated in places of honour with Abbot A, Prior Conchal, and Fergal of the Ivarca, king of the local Tuath, and father of a prince and two princesses at the monastery school. The whole congregation attended, including the warrior monks and their trainees. Only the gatekeepers and the sentries at the estate borders were on duty, warned to be doubly vigilant. Outlaws or enemies might choose this vulnerable moment to attack. In his welcome address, A praised to the bonds of friendship and mutual interest now firmly established between Armagh and Sleaty, Patrick's burning desire to spread the gospel to the ends of the earth, and his diligence in responding to the promptings of the Holy Spirit in his words and actions, were now finding their fulfilment in the present company and in other Christian communities throughout Ireland. The Armagh visitors replied suitably, though Mirko thought with rather less enthusiasm. He also noticed that neither the Armagh abbot nor his prior had come. Now the replacement sentries and gatekeepers were sent out, and the first shift brought in. While these ate and drank, the company was entertained with poems and stories of Cúchulainn and the Táin Bó Cúilnge. Afterwards, the harpists played sleepy Suan Three music until the replete guests retired for the night. As spring moved into summer, the programme of defence training was completed. The 25 Sleaty men had perfected their skills. Training was replaced by weekly weapons practice. The monastery now had what was really an army, Mirko thought regretfully. A small army of only 37 men, but many kings of Thuha had fewer in their personal bodyguards. What would Patrick or Brigid have thought of this? Would they have quoted Christ's words to Peter, "They who take the sword shall perish by the sword"? A reassured him. "As long as I am abbot here," he declared, "they will only defend, never attack, never steal, never harm women or children, but defend they must, as you know." And this the master scriptor could not deny. Putting aside his doubts, Mirko devoted himself again to his work on the Gospel of John, the Gospel of love by the disciple whom the Lord loved. He found peace in the beauty of the words and the beauty of his rendering of them. He took pleasure, too, in helping the steady progress of the scribes under his care. Outstanding among them was Donacha, who had now returned from completing his legal training with the Brehev of the Ivarca and resumed his career as scribe and illuminator.